Over the last half decade, one of the most interesting companies in all of media and sports has been Overtime, which went from a media company to a basketball company. It is running its own league down in Atlanta of high school age students and basketball players. And to me, it's been one of the most innovative organizations, period, in sports over these last 10 years. And today on the show, I wanted to have the person who runs that. Who better to talk about Overtime than the CEO of Overtime, Dan Porter. And I thought Dan would be great to talk about what Overtime is doing now, to talk about what's going on in the larger media landscape, basketball landscape, amateur basketball landscape. But on this episode of Business Decision, I'm Mike Vorkunov, the host, the reporter with The Athletic. But on my show today, I wanted to get to the most important and pressing question I could possibly ask. Dan, as a washed 30-something-year-old sports writer and father, can you explain to me what 6'7 is?
Wow, it's so funny. I had a 50% chance that this is going to be the question.
This is an earnest question. I'm the last person in America who doesn't know. You don't get it.
Yes. The whole point of 6'7 is the whole point of youth culture in general. Like the 30-plus, the dad, the teacher, grandparent, they're not supposed to understand it. If you understand it, then it's not an act of youth kind of inclusion, community, and rebellion. So it's a funny phrase that came originally from a rap song, and we had a athlete, Taylan Kinney, who made a video in Starbucks, like, am I going to get 6 or 7? And it just kind of took off, and then he made some more, and then it just took its life of its own. And by the way, this was like 7 months ago or so. And subsequently, like, we were like, oh, it was a funny meme, 6'7", kind of kids got it. It was more in the basketball landscape. How much longer? 6, 7 minutes. You know, how much is that? $6, $7. But it just didn't stop. And I think part of the reason is that, like, to get nerdy about it, a lot of phrases become memetic or memes, but this had this kind of like hand gesture. And I remember one of my sons, who's in his 20s, was watching a baseball game and the sound was off and you saw people behind and you knew what they were doing. So now you've got this like visual, this audio thing. You've got TikTok, you've got Overtime amplifying it. And it's just honestly, like, I think a lot of things in culture, it's something that doesn't really mean anything, but everybody's in on the joke except for everybody who's not young. And I think that's like, whether it's hip hop, rock and roll music, long hair in the 60s, who knows, every type of youth trend, skateboarding, like, young people need something that feels like that's their own, that differentiates them from older people. And I had a guy ask me yesterday, he said, my 3-year-old says 6'7 all the time. Does it mean something bad? And I was like, it doesn't mean anything. And in that, it means everything.
Well, listen, the reason why I want to ask you about it is, one, earnestly, I really do want to know what it is. Like, I can't do another Google deep dive. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to shortcut this and wait until I do the podcast with Dan to ask him. But secondly, because it kind of speaks to what I think of OTE and Overtime as, which is, you guys do sit kind of at this cross section of basketball, of culture, right, of sports, of media, all these types of things that you have worked assiduously at perfecting over the last half decade, let's say. How do you not feel as if when you show up to the OTE campus, like Steve Buscemi in 30 Rock saying, how do you do, fellow kids, to figure out how do you, you know, continue to fit in with the players at OTE, the people at OTE, but also the culture that you're trying to reach, the demographics that you're trying to reach through OTE, which is, I think, oriented, you know, towards young people, right? I say that as, again, someone in his 30s, when I say young people, it now sounds just super weird. I feel like a politician saying that phrase. But, you know, towards young people, towards people who are not your age and your demographic, how do you figure out how to continue to be able to, you know, evolve and iterate and to reach that the type of people that you have been reaching with OTE and with Overtime?
Yeah. So, I mean, part of the question is, listen, I'm a gentleman in his 50s who runs a media company with over 100 million followers who are predominantly teenagers and in their 20s. I would say a couple things. Number one is, clearly I don't make the content. I'm the CEO, but I'm not making the posts. There's tons and tons of people. We have people who work here who are 19, 20, 22. And one of the powerful things about how we've built the business is you just say to those people, make the stuff that you like. Like, it's not any startup's advantage is not being corporate. Nobody has to book a conference room and make a PowerPoint to tell me about what they want to post because it's that. I would say number two, if you look at my background, I worked in music, which is predominantly youth culture. I ran a gaming company. Before I started this, I was the head of digital at Endeavor. I represented 14-year-old YouTubers. So I've kind of spent my whole, a large part of, I actually started out as a high school teacher in Brooklyn. So I've spent the majority of my career being around young people and working with them and culture. I'm a huge fan of music, fashion, a lot of things like that. And so I think part of it is just paying attention and listening. And I think our intersection is around things like music and content and culture and so forth. And listen, at the end of the day, people always say to me, you know, Dan, like you're hanging out with rappers, you're hanging out with basketball players who are 20 years old, you're hanging out with NBA players. Like, what are you talking to them about? And I'm like, they want to talk to me about business. Like, they want to understand how overtime works and how business works. I'm not talking to them about music. I'm not talking to them about an elevator screen at high up in the post or like anything else like that in basketball. And I'm not talking about them about gaming or fashion or music. But clearly, we've built a business that reaches a lot of people. There's nobody even close to us. And every single one of those people, from NBA players to rappers to people who play in our league, they want to understand that. And if there's a window for them to talk to me, then there's a window for me to talk to them.
Well, I want to ask you about OTE. I mean, I first met you, it was a number of years ago now. I was at a high school basketball tournament in New Jersey. I was there to see Nazir Cunningham, who was then a player with OTE. At that point, I don't know if this is the right way to describe this, but maybe you guys were OTE 1.0 back then. You were paying players significant sums of money to play for your league, to recruit them to play for your league. That was early stages of NIL. So much has changed in amateur basketball since then. So much has changed for OTE since then. Where does OTE stand right now as kind of the rest of the sub-NBA ecosystem has caught up to you guys a little bit in that players are getting paid. Players are getting paid for their name, image, and likeness. Players now getting paid by their own colleges, right? Through the house settlement. Where did OTE go from there for people who have kind of like checked in and out on the story in the intervening years? And how do you, you know, to your point about all the other stuff we talked about, find a way to pivot and change the company through that?
Yeah, I would say paying people is not a business. That's just a function of the business. So there's no need for us to pivot. That was an input, not an output. And if you look at our business today, we have this massive community and media reach. And then we're really strong in football, where we have OT7 and we have some announcements about more we're doing in football. And in basketball, where we have Select for girls and OTE for boys. And it's really powered ultimately by kind of, you know, two things. On the one hand, like, we built a really big audience of young people. I think traditionally sports below the level of college were primarily the audience was parents. And we had an instinct that young people were not consuming live sports like they were in the past. They don't have cable subscriptions. They wanted something that related to them. And so we built two leagues for them. And both in football and basketball, we have over 10 million followers, millions and millions of people all around the world who are teenagers, 20s, are watching our sports league. So number one is, like, we showed that there was an audience for what we were doing. And I think number two is that you see in college how much change there's been, right? Like, there are teams and conferences that are not even geographically in those conferences anymore. So you've had a massive conference realignment, right, with SEC and Big Ten becoming really strong and Big East and ACC less so. You've had a shifting media landscape where 40% of ESPN's business right now is college football. You've had NIL, which has completely changed the game for that. And then you're looking at where that's going to impact next. And that's completely in our lane. And I think you're going to see the same thing in high school. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing because, listen, there are 32,000 high schools in America. 31,990 high schools are going to do the exact same thing as when you went to high school and when I went to high school. I played varsity sports. I'm not even that sporty. But there are going to be 10 to 25 high schools that want to play on a national schedule, that want millions of people to watch what they do. And that's going to exist. And we're already doing that. And we already have the audience for that. And that's going to be a large opportunity. Whether we pay them before NIL, whether they have NIL afterwards, like all those things are ultimately immaterial. And I think at a high level, the fact it's always been kind of a conflict that the fact that somebody who's 14 can act in a movie or a TV show or be in Stranger Things or be a YouTuber or make a record and get paid, and yet some other kid in their class can shoot a ball through a basket and not get paid. And by paid, I mean, you know, be able to take advantage of their own name, image, likeness. I think there's that. And I think his name, image, likeness has become really, really strong, become a force in college sports. And if you are very, very anti-NIL, which I also understand, you can also understand, I mean, we took Reggie Bush's Heisman away from him for nothing. Like, you think about all the crackdown. I had somebody who worked for me who, when he played college basketball in the 2000s, tried to sell one shirt with his name on the back of the shirt, and he almost lost his entire scholarship. So when it goes so rigidly one way, it often goes another way. But I think we all say internally, whether we're in football, girls basketball, or boys basketball, if they don't know your name, if they don't recognize your image, they're not going to pay you for your likeness. And if you think about the empowerment of young people and athletes in this country, there are really a finite number of NBA teams, a finite number of NFL teams, and a really finite number of WNBA teams. But there are 351 D1 schools in this country. And you're talking about people who have talent who might not make it all the way. They may not become KD or LeBron James, but they have a chance to change their life and their family's life in college. And I think that's really powerful.
No, absolutely. The ability to make money off of your NIL has been one of the most positive changes in college sports for a number of years. I mean, listen, for over, like, in the last century, right? Like,
the colleges already make money off of their name, image, likeness. We're just allowing the athletes to do the same. And for us, it wasn't a pivot. I mean, I think part of it happened because we just said, okay, we're going to pay them because there is no NIL. Everybody freaked out, and then there became NIL. But it just becomes an accelerant for our business.
Well, I meant in the sense that, did it impact which players you could recruit and get to join OTE because of that?
Before you had to give up your eligibility, so Menasar Thompson couldn't play in high school and they want to go right to the NBA anyway. And so the slice of the athlete that we could work with was much more constrained. And now we can basically have play in our league anyone. And we have multiple number one players in their class playing the league, whether they play on a team that's based in Atlanta or Texas or North Carolina or anything else like that. And, you know, people want to watch the best players. And so that part is also an accelerant for us.
So where do you think OTE stands kind of like in that vertical chain of basketball? Let's say I'll focus just on basketball. Is this something that you see as like a stepping stone to college basketball and then to the NBA? Do you see it as stepping stone straight to the NBA for your most talented and best prospects? How do you think like it fits in that larger ecosystem?
So that's a very basketball question. My answer is we're the second biggest basketball league in the world, like nonstop. We have more followers, more views on social and anywhere else than any other basketball league, than any college conference, than anything else. We're not a live event business, so there are people who get more people into arena. But when you're talking about eyes on us outside of March Madness, we're gigantic. And so if you're deep in the ecosystem, you ask us, like, what about the G League? What about this? What about that? Look, listen, the players come, they play, millions and millions of people watch. We had people from over 70 countries watch our finals. I was in Abu Dhabi at a basketball tournament, and 50 kids from Dubai showed up to watch, and the only other people there were international scouts. And so it's this massive audience phenomena. The rest is just like, whatever. Some people might go to the NBA. We have four people at Kansas. I have six to eight players who are making, you know, seven figures in college. I'm in the business of creating the second biggest basketball league in the world. Everything else that happens as a result of that is a byproduct. I'm not IMG Academy. I'm not the G League. I'm not any of those other things like that. There's always going to be different and multiple paths. That's not a business. The business is saying that there are tens and tens of millions of fans around the world who want to watch this product specifically because it speaks to them. And my job is to double down on that.
So what's the biggest headache right now in running the second biggest basketball league in the world?
I think it's the same as being in any live event sports business. Talent, right? This player wants to be on a different team. This player gets injured. I think second, we have a tremendous amount of parity this year. I think across all professional sports leagues and even what we do, you never want to have a team that's 2-7 and a team that's 9-0. Like, the more close games that you have, the better. And this year, we have that. And I think really just talent, parity, all the kinds of things everyone else focuses on is probably the biggest. And then honestly, just being in a position to support all the players. We have full-time staff for health, for mental health, for college offers. I could give you numerous examples of people who came and played in our league. Cole Rosario was the 33rd ranked player in the state of Florida, not even in the country. And now he is dropping 15, 16, 17 points at Kansas. So really taking the platform and letting people who are really, really good, who might not have had that exposure or otherwise, go as far as they can go. That's not a pain point, but that's like super rewarding.
So I want to ask, like, to step back a little bit. One of the biggest issues for all sports right now is getting, I'm going to use this horrible phrase again, young people to watch games, right? To watch more than just highlights. You are a league obviously oriented towards that as your audience.
Literally our MO.
Yes. So this is why I want to ask you that question is, how do you do that? And do you have people who run other leagues or other sports media companies coming to you asking you how to reach that audience and how to be able to do that? Because at this point, it sure seems like no one has been able to figure it out.
Yeah, I think we entered into an age where, number one, a lot of sports was on cable television, which young people didn't have. Number two, compared to when I grew up, there's a lot more opportunities to spend your time and attention playing video games, watching streaming, doing a lot of other things like that. And I think number three, what the internet did was the internet kind of said, we have less monoculture than we've ever had. And if you're really interested in the outdoors, you can find as much content as you want there. And so if you are young and sports didn't speak to you, you kind of fell out at some level. So yes, we have a relationship with NBC and the Olympics that's formal. We have a relationship with the NFL that's formal. I've hosted over 20 GMs and departments from the NBA, and we're very close and work closely with them. So yes, we have a large partnership with a lot of them. And on top of it, part of that is driven by the fact that if you are a formal league or team account, there are limits to how you can speak to your audience because you're a business at a different level. Part of the reason they work with us is because they understand that we can speak to our audience with a slightly different voice. And that's incredibly positive and additive to what they do. But if you think about what we do and why, number one, I'm not in the sports business. I'm in the audience development business. I'm constantly focused on what a 16, 18, 20-year-old wants to watch and how. Number two, I show them athletes who look exactly like them, who encapsulate their hopes and dreams. There are a lot of incredible professional athletes. I'm a fan of many of them, but oftentimes they're multimillionaires and they're much older than who the audience is. And the audience wants to see someone who's like them. And number three is our product is designed for that. The people who call our games are 19, 20, 21 years old. Some of them are massive YouTubers. The pace of the game is very fast. The way we talk about the game on social, we do more views of our sports leagues in the off season than the on season, because we are constantly on social building. Three of the top 10 most viewed sports teams in the world on TikTok are actually teams that play in our basketball league alongside of Real Madrid, the Yankees, everything else like that. And so because sports essentially grew up as a live event business, then became a media product, social was not an afterthought, but it was a change in less how they make money. We're social first. We grew up on TikTok, on YouTube, on Instagram, on all of those places like that. And I think our product reflects that. And I think our engagement and our audience reflects that and how we talk to them too.
Just to get in the weeds a little bit, I think all leagues now think of themselves as audience development companies, right? Like that's their media companies now first. That's how the NBA thinks about itself, the NFL. Like for you, what have you found works in developing that audience and building audiences? Like what particular things over the years through, I'm sure it's been some trial and error, some very informed decisions. Like what have you found is the key to building the audience that you've wanted to build and that you have built?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not going to give you my full playbook here.
Why not?
I do think that the leagues think of themselves as media companies, and they are, the NFL and the NBA specifically, are excellent operators. And they do an incredible job and obviously create a ton of value there. I think for us, our audience isn't everyone, right? And I think that's hard. If you are running SportsCenter on Instagram, your audience is 20, 30, 40s, 50s, 60s, and it's hard. It's a much more challenging to try to speak to everybody because you end up somewhere in the middle. We clearly understand our lane of Gen Z, Gen Alpha, millennial fans. And so we speak to them directly in a voice and a style that they recognize. The influencers that we work with are the influencers that they know that their parents don't know. The phrases that we use, the themes and the memes and everything else like that. And so I think sometimes across business, like if you have a very, very focused audience, it's really different. It's like if I was in the, you know, apparel business, I could choose hypothetically to focus on gym bros, you know, and that's very different than focusing on a mom who's also going to buy my product. And so I think just because we're very focused there, what you said is they think of themselves as media companies, and that's accurate. I think we actually start with the audience and work backwards and understand what they're doing, how to engage them. We don't have 50 years of legacy fandom like professional sports leagues do, so we have to make that out of the blue. And I'd say that three of our teams are on the 10 most viewed on TikTok. Those teams didn't exist 4 years ago. So a lot of it is driven by less constraints. We don't have team owners. We don't have media rights deals. We don't have any of those things, which obviously are immensely valuable for the sports league. So we have to work with what we have. And in some ways it's a deficit. In some ways it's a tremendous amount of freedom. I just think that, you know, people who make video games, people who make shows like Stranger Things geared at young people, they understand who their audience is, and they do certain things in that. I watch a lot of pro sports. I love all the announcers. Tony Romo's incredible, an NFL announcer. There are a lot of incredible people for the NBA. It's just that's not who our audience wants to see and hear. So I think it starts with the pace of the game, who's announcing, who's playing, how they're experiencing it on social, and something just like the beginning of our conversation, 6-7, that makes our audience feel like, oh, this is for me. This is not a product for everyone or for old people.
I also don't like a lot of the announcers that are on TV calling games, by the way. I want that on the record. So I've asked a lot about overtime and OTE. What's a sports or media company out there that you find interesting, that you find to be doing interesting things right now?
Wow, that is a good question. I would say that I think, first of all, 10 years ago, there were not a lot of good professional sports teams on social media. I think that's completely different now. I think in the NBA, the Nets are really good. The Hornets are good. In the NFL, the Bills are good. The Eagles are good. I think they've really crossed that chasm, and there are a lot of enormously talented people who run those accounts, and they've been given more and more freedom to relate to the audience. I think besides that, it's hard. In the sports business ecosystem, a lot of what gets talked about is sports technology, cameras that do this, ordering from your seat. I think that there are a lot of startup sports entities. It's very, very hard for any of them to get scale. So honestly, if you ask me my inspiration, a lot of my inspiration comes from just watching people who are really good at YouTube, individual creators on TikTok, people in the gaming space, people in the music space, and trying to understand why audiences resonate and bring that to sports. I actually don't spend a lot of time looking at what other people are doing in sports, believe it or not.
What do you spend a lot of your time on right now? What's the thing that's taken up your attention and your bandwidth?
I look at a lot of the, clearly I run a business, so I look at a lot of the metrics and the analytics for our products. Interesting things, you know, when we got our first round of funding in 2016, everyone's like, the future of sports is on the phone. And that was our pitch. I'd say more than half people who watch our live events or our leagues or our games, we do 75 to 100 live events a year, are watching on a connected television. Like, I just think 10 years ago, somebody would have laughed in your face. But the reality is that on YouTube, the majority of our audience are watching A, on a connected television, B, the average watch time is 25 to 30 minutes. And so the common narrative is, oh, young people have a short attention span, snackable content, bite-sized content, things that clueless old people who don't know anything about social like to say. But the reality is 25 to 30 minutes is a lot of watch time. And I just think a lot about how those platforms are evolving, what they're doing. We had 10,000 people watching a game that was streamed on a handheld phone on TikTok Live. You know, those companies, YouTube, TikTok, Meta, they're very, very, very smart. And we want to be at the cutting edge of whatever they're doing and how they're doing it.
So considering that so much, you've talked so much about TikTok and so much of your business seems to be oriented towards TikTok, as we had over the last 2 years.
TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube are all powerful drivers of our business.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the only one, but you've mentioned that a few times. What was your thought over the last 2 years as it seemed like there was a chance TikTok might get banned in the United States?
My thought was that it's never going to happen. I'm not an expert on anything.
You're just bearish the whole time, selling against.
No. My thought was they're never going to ban it.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about politics. I don't know anything about international relations. I just know that when you have a product that tens, if not hundreds of millions of Americans are using every single day, if I were a politician, I might not be the person who wanted to stand in front of that, and they would work that out. And I think, listen, they're all incredible. YouTube is an incredible streaming platform for us. The live chat, I mean, we'll do thousands of comments per minute. The infrastructure is amazing. Instagram has a massive audience, is a very premium product. And TikTok's discovery algorithm means that we can sign a new player, and if he falls into the FYP, the For You page, all of a sudden he can blow up and become really popular. And I think as a sports league that is social first as opposed to just stream first, like, there's never been a better time for us to grow and explode both globally, which we have. I mean, we were streaming last weekend. We had an OTE game that had tens of thousands of people watching. We also happened to be streaming it on our Brazilian account in Portuguese, and also on our French account in French, with French announcers and Brazilian announcers who are all in their 20s. And I was looking, I think it was 2 a.m. in France, and thousands of people were watching the game live. And we were in Brazil, where we actually have the number one player in Brazil who plays in our league, and thousands of people were watching live. And like, there's never been a better time to reach every single person around the globe, to be honest.
No, absolutely. But I was just wondering, like, you at no point were like, hey, if this TikTok ban actually goes through and the bill that they sign actually gets put into use, like, we have to figure out how to build a new third pillar of how we reach people if TikTok actually goes away. That was never a thought or contingency plan you tried to build.
I don't live my life in fear.
Fair enough. All right. I said I'm going to keep this to 30 minutes. So I'm going to ask you one last question.
By the way, my other real answer to that is it would affect everyone. Like, how does it affect overtime? How does it affect the NFL, the NBA?
Absolutely.
Everyone. So in a
way, I'm not saying it's unique.
In a way, if it went away, we'd all just, the whole ecosystem would move over here. Now, if you ask me what would happen if it went away for you, but for no one else, then I might leave my life in fear. But besides that, not really.
All right. I appreciate that. Either I fear or we all fear together.
Exactly.
There's a humanity towards that. All right. I said I want to keep this to 30 minutes. I mean that because, I think people will just stop listening. After to your point, people watch 25 to 30
listening.
Minutes.
Don't stop listening yet.
There's one last question I have for you. Since this is the podcast named Business Decision, the last question I have for you is, what's the business decision that Overtime has made during its lifetime that you think has really helped propel it to where it is now?
I would say that number one, far and away, betting on young people, that young people have value for who they are now, not what their future expectations are. So if you think about the entire sports ecosystem as an example, and wherever we were, Roselle Catholic, we were watching that game or whatever. It tends to be, you know, here's Dan Porter. He's the number 9 player in his class. These are the schools he might commit to. Here's a mock draft that features him. We tend to say that somebody who's 17 or 18 years old, their main value is where they're going to end up in the future. Are they going to be an NBA player? People always say, oh, is Eli Ellis going to make it to the NBA or not? And I think our bet was like, we think they're really interesting and valuable right now. We don't care where they're ranked or where they're going to go to college or if they're going to make the NFL or the NBA. What if we just said, like, they're actually pretty cool right now and they have a lot of value and let's celebrate them for who they are? And that was completely opposite what everyone else did. Every site was about who, you know, who's ranking, who's being recruited, who are we getting to our team, mock draft, everything else like that. And it sounds really dumb and subtle, but I think in general in society, that tends to be true. When I was 17 years old, people would ask me, where are you going to go to college? When I got to college, they'd say, what's your major going to be? What are you going to do when you graduate college? There was always some bar ahead. Nobody ever said, who are you right now? And what's interesting about you now? And that was honestly our biggest bet. It was a perception and a lens and a very focused thing. And I'd say the second biggest bet was sports media. We had this mantra internally. Sports media is about talking to the audience about sports. Overtime is about listening to the audience. So we didn't just think that the athletes were valuable. We thought all of our fans were valuable right now for who they were. And we didn't want to talk at them. We wanted to listen to them.
Mm. Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed listening to Dan. Living the moment. That's a great piece of advice. That can come on a fortune cookie.
Let's go.
Dan, I appreciate you coming on to the show. I appreciate you taking the time to explain to me what 6-7 is as the washed person that I am.
I better see you in a gym sometime soon.
I will try to be there. I'm going to look up where your schedule is next, see where OT is going around me, and I'm going to find you and be like, I found you in real life. I told you
amazing.
I would do it.
Amazing.
Dan, thank you for doing this. Everyone, give OT a watch if you haven't yet. I found it to be really fascinating. I've watched it a few times. And I think the thing that's interesting to me about it is that it does, to your point, hit on a number of things you might see, not to go against the whole live in the moment thing, but that you might be familiar with in the future. I've watched it for a lot of reasons because I like to watch the NBA and watch basketball, but you can watch it for other reasons too. Like, everyone has kind of a reason that they tune in when they do. Dan, anything you want to plug while we're here? I'll give you the floor.
I would say number one, OTE, Overtime Elite. We play on Fridays and Saturdays on YouTube. There's a couple incredible matchups. Jermaine O'Neal, the NBA legend, has a team with the number one player in the country, and they're very dominant right now. So that's one. And I would say you can find us at Overtime or at OTE on any single platform that you enjoy watching sports on.
There you go. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. everyone, I'm Mike Vorkunov. Thank you for watching and listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks, Mike.